Okay, now we proceed to the second case for today, which is appeal number 063401, Evans versus the City of Chicago. Back for a second time, Mr. Lovey.
May it please the court, John Lovey along with Locke Bowman here on behalf of our client, Michael Evans. And the reason that we're here is because what happened below was fundamentally unfair. They had 2 years to build a defense. We got a couple of weeks right before trial to try to catch up. We were deprived of meaningful experts, no motions in limine, no ability to challenge anything that they said. And I want to take a step back. Why did this happen? We sued them. We made very serious allegations that they ruined Mr. Evans' life, and they said, we're going to opt out of discovery. Why did they do that? Because they said, if we answer the question, did we frame Michael Evans, that would subject us to criminal liability. They got an enormous indulgence by just saying, you know what, discovery, we're going to pass. You can't do any depths, pass. The district court decided to let him in at the last minute. That was within the district court's discretion. You may have made a different decision. The district court was allowed to let them testify.
Well, but counsel, it was more than an indulgence. It was the exercise of a constitutionally protected privilege.
They had a privilege to not testify, but having sat out discovery, the district court didn't have to let them back in to testify. He did. What he didn't have discretion to do, though, was to permit us to impeach them with their prior silence. And Judge Kaur made this reviewing court's work easy because he made the Harris findings. The last guy had to tell you to change the law. We're just saying to apply Harris. Judge Kaur said first, Harris depends on the timing, you know, it talks about well in advance of trial versus just prior to trial. He said, Judge Kaur said on the record, this is not well in advance of trial. He triggered Harris. But the far, far more important finding is Judge Kaur found prejudice. He said, despite what you're telling me, that you know, you can get deposed at the last minute, I find prejudice. And of course, that was not erroneous. We were prejudiced. There's no legitimate dispute we weren't prejudiced.
One of the issues is the defendants had continually asked for continuances, which had been denied. In light of Judge Kaur's decision to allow these last-minute depositions, there was no request by you to have a continuance so you could have additional time. I think that's a problem.
Your Honor, and we respectfully disagree. At the pretrial conference, he says, I'm going to let you back in, but I find the plaintiff is prejudiced. Mm-hmm. Harris provides for that circumstance. The district court can let you back in, but if there's prejudice, we are allowed to make up for the prejudice by impeaching them with their prior silence. We went to trial assuming the court was going to follow the law. It wasn't until the trial started they filed an emergency motion to bar the Harris impeachment. After the jury had already been selected and we're waiting for opening statement, the judge with one word says, bar the Harris impeachment. By then, we proceeded to trial. And frankly, you know, it's not a real issue because Judge Kaur said this trial's going. Both sides need to plan for that. That's a constraint that both sides have to take into consideration. They made the decisions they did, and that's where it left them. Having found prejudice, Your Honors, there is no longer any discretion. Harris is a good rule. Harris is the rule that protects the Fifth Amendment, because if you didn't have Harris, you could never let a defendant back in after they sat out discovery. Harris says if the district court wants to give him a break, he can, but where there's no discretion is in permitting the Fifth Amendment impeachment. And the district court never explained why it didn't apply Harris.
Why is that any different from many other rulings here? If the district court lets that go in, and some district judges might have gone along with you and let that in, but then it seems that you have a lot of testimony that's going to come in about the special prosecutor and why these individuals took the Fifth Amendment and whatever reasons, maybe what their lawyers told them and all that sort of stuff, and we get into a lot of ancillary business here.
They created the mess. They sat out discovery. The judge didn't have to let him back in. But having let him back in, we can't get beat every which way. No discovery, no experts, no nothing. And Harris is phrased in the mandatory. It is reversible error not to permit this impeachment if there's prejudice. They can't get out of the box.
But in Harris, there was no discovery permitted. And as I read this record, Judge Kaur thought the prejudice that existed would be alleviated by allowing discovery. And he expressly did that. And there were some delays and so forth and maneuverings, for lack of a better word, but the discovery was had.
That's the appeal, Your Honor. If Your Honor concludes that Judge Kaur found that prejudice will be ameliorated by 7 depths on the last 9 days, then we lose. But Judge Kaur didn't find that. It's in our reply brief. What George Kaur said is, despite what you're telling me about the officers getting redeposed at the last minute, despite that, I find prejudice. But I'm going to let them testify anyway. And that, since that is the appeal, we urge you to look at the citations. He says, I'm not buying it. There's prejudice. And of course there's prejudice. Depths at the last minute, no experts, of course there's prejudice. And once he found prejudice, it then became reversible error not to apply Harris. So again, Your Honor, if you're right in your assumption that the district court said that seven depths on the last day is going to cure the prejudice, then we lose. But if the district court found prejudice, and he did find prejudice, because how could he not find prejudice? We were prejudiced. We got no discovery. Our experts locked in before they testified.
How did what they eventually testified about impact the testimony that was going to be offered by the expert witnesses?
Well, our Laverty, if they would have gone on record, we would have orderly had Laverty say, you know, they said X, Y, Z, Q, P, and I disagree with all that. That's how litigation works. You have fact discovery, then you have expert discovery. Gary Wells, an eyewitness identification expert, has to give his testimony before they describe how they did the eyewitness identification. It's hard for me to explain in 7.5 minutes how getting no discovery ruined our case, but we have Judge Kaur's finding. There was prejudice.
And one of your positions is that, of course, your case was totally laid out for the defendants before
Absolutely.
They testified. But let me ask you a question about this Frank Lafferty's health in July of 2006. Would he have been able at that point, given what his illness was, to have reviewed the depositions and given a new video deposition if there had been a continuance?
Your Honor, he did have an opportunity. If there had been a continuance, he died.
But I understand. I understand. I'm talking about before he passed.
He locked in at the last. We made a judgment when he could no longer have the strength to go forward. He gave his trial testimony by video. After he ran out of strength, they then said, all right, we want back in. We want to testify now. Then he died. So we were prejudiced. And we don't have to re-decide it. Judge Kaur found prejudice. And that wasn't an abuse of discretion. We got we were prejudiced. And, Your Honors, all of that assumes that the Fifth Amendment was legitimately invoked. The special prosecutor's mandate is limited by law. The special prosecutor's mandate was limited to investigations under the command of John Burge. This case was not under the command of John Burge. And my colleague is not going to get up here and tell you this investigation was under the command of John Burge, because it was not under the command of John Burge. So there was, the special prosecutor had no authority to analyze the Cabasa case. They had every right during depositions to say, we're not going to answer the Burge cases, we're not going to answer the Wilson cases, fifth. But what they didn't have a right to do.
The lawyer told them to invoke the Fifth Amendment because the special prosecutor was around. So what are they supposed to do?
Your Honor, well, first of all, their explanation, as we point out in our briefs, was not that the lawyer told me. It's that we made our own guess. You know, shame on me. I didn't know you could selectively invoke. We made a big mistake. That was their explanation. And it wouldn't matter if they had gotten legal advice. The special prosecutor was not investigating Cabasa. It could not, as a matter of law. They can't say our lawyers gave us bad advice. They're the ones who argue that you have to be bound by your lawyer's mistake.
But the special prosecutor was investigating this Street Files phenomenon, was
Your Honor,
he not? And that was implicated in this case?
No, Your Honor. The special prosecutor was investigating what, by statute and by law, the mandate was. Investigations under the command of John Burge in Area 2 and Area 3.
But did that include this practice of
the
Street Files?
No, it did not include the Cabasa case.
Well, I know it didn't include the Cabasa case. Did it include the phenomenon of Street Files?
No, Your Honor. They were looking at torture cases under John Burge. The only reason that there was a special prosecutor is because Devine had a conflict because he had represented Burge, torture. It's not Street Files at all. And, Your Honor, your line of questioning suggests that what they should have done is come to the deposition and say, you know what, I think I got a good faith basis not to answer a Street File question. But did you frame Michael Evans? Did you talk to Lisa Cabasa's mother? Did you talk to Jan Janczewski? They went carte blanche, and they had no authority to do that.
And so would your position be that, as well, that this matter couldn't have been referred to the federal prosecutor, that they couldn't have exerted the...
Obviously, any case in the courthouse, you could say, it could potentially, but their excuse, the special prosecutor, had no authority. She will have to admit that. They asked the judge for a jury instruction that this case has nothing to do with the special prosecutor, and the judge accepted their position. They want to come 180 degrees and explain that's why they took the fifth here. It was never legitimately invoked, nor was it legitimately withdrawn. I want to make one final point. When they withdrew the fifth, the only thing that had changed was their strategic interests. In 2005, they said, we don't know what the special prosecutor is going to do. Don't make us make a decision. Judge Shankier said, I'm going to force you to choose. You're in or you're out. They said, we're out. Come trial, they want to paint this picture in their brief of an orderly process where they decided, you know what, the threat has lifted. Now we're back in. That's not what happened. Judge Kaur said, sua sponte. They filed a motion saying, we might might want to get back in, depending on what the special prosecutor does. Judge Kaur said you got a deadline by right before trial, you're in or you're out. They huddled up. They said, we still don't know what the special prosecutor is going to do. But you know what? Our interests have changed. We got a trial now. Even though we set out discovery, we're going to testify. And nothing had changed. Nothing but their own strategic interests. They filed a motion immediately before trial saying, we still don't know what the special prosecutor is going to do. They were in the same boat as when they sat out discovery. The judge let them back in, but there was no discretion not to penalize them with their strategy. I want to make one final point.
You're heavy into your rebuttal.
I understand. And I'm going to make one final point because I've litigated against the city of Chicago, and they are fine, fine appellate lawyers, but I've sort of seen their playbook. If there's an argument that they can't answer, they ignore it.
Delacek, you've seen
The argument that they ignored was Catalinic testified at his redeposition, I would have gone to the special prosecutor. I didn't ask for immunity. I wasn't given immunity. I was prepared to testify without asserting the Fifth. That cannot be reconciled with him sitting out discovery in our case. It cannot be reconciled. And, Your Honors, I would like to reserve the time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Ms. Notes.
May it please the court. The jury rejected Mr. Evans's claim that Chicago police officers had concealed evidence and manipulated witnesses against him. To overturn this adverse verdict, he challenges three evidentiary rulings, which are reviewed for abuse of discretion. This morning, I will discuss one of the challenged rulings, the decision to allow the defendants who had asserted the Fifth Amendment in good faith and then who fully complied with discovery to waive the privilege and testify freely. I will explain that this ruling is not only not fundamentally wrong, but also that it was made necessary solely as a result of Mr. Evans's strategic litigation choices. With regard to Mr. Evans's complaints about the stipulation and about the district court's treatment of Detective Dignan, I will rest on our brief because Mr. Evans's counsel did not address those issues in his opening remarks this morning.
What did Judge Kaur actually say and base his ruling on when he denied the request to impeach with the prior invocation of the Fifth?
Well, he denied the request for the impeachment evidence at the same time that he denied Mr. Evans's request to have the testimony barred and to have the defendants defaulted. And what he said is the remedies, there may be a remedy for your complaints about the privilege assertions, but the remedies you are seeking, that's not the way to deal with this. So essentially what the district court did, the district court issued an open invitation to Mr. Evans to seek an alternative remedy, such as postponing the trial so he could take additional discovery. Mr. Evans declined to do that. His strategy at that time was to take this case to trial as quickly as possible. Obviously, that strategy did not work out as he hoped.
Was a postponement offered?
Certainly, the defendants had made crystal clear that they were willing to postpone the trial to give Mr. Evans the discovery he needed, and Mr. Evans never asked the district court for more time for discovery. He says now, of course, it would be futile to ask the district court, but we simply can't know that because he never asked. Certainly, the fact that the defense in the past had asked for more time for very different reasons and over Mr. Evans's objection is not a reason to believe that the district court necessarily would have rejected an unopposed request from Mr. Evans. Since the district court wasn't allowed to make a ruling, we can't speculate about what that ruling would be. In fact, it's a fundamental rule of trial practice that even if you think the district court is going to deny your motion, you need to bring that motion and get a ruling so that there is a record to review. There is no record to review in this case because Mr. Evans did not bring his motion.
Well, is there a record that the judge actually weighed the equities in deciding the evidentiary issue on whether to allow the impeachment, or is what you've just recited the sum total of what the judge said? Your remedies are elsewhere, or words to that effect?
That is what the judge said, that your remedies are elsewhere, and we can think about another way to deal with this. There may be a way. Here's an invitation to you to discuss another way, but the remedies you're asking for are the wrong remedies. And that is because the remedies he sought are extreme remedies. It is well settled that the Fifth Amendment...
Well, let me just stop you there. That's not what Judge Kaur said, though. That's your argument. In other words, I have the same concern that Judge Wood does. What's the rationale for Judge Kaur's decision? I understand he said there are other ways to do this, but why did he reject their request to impeach them? What's the reasoning? What's the rationale? Was that on the record? I understand your post, supposition as to what the basis was. What did he say?
Well, what we had argued is that it is well settled that it is always within a district court's discretion to exclude evidence of prior silence if the probative value is outweighed by the prejudicial effect.
I get what you said. Mm-hmm. Right. Okay. So now he's using his discretion. Why does he say that he's going to reject it? Does he weigh the prejudice versus the probative value? No. Does he give like a rationale or basis for it other than saying, I reject this, there are other ways?
Well, but though we know that the way you determine what the probative value is whether the opposing party has had sufficient opportunity for discovery prior to trial. That, for example, is what Harris said.
No, that goes to prejudice.
Wait, I'm sorry?
That goes to prejudice. That has nothing to do with the probative value of the impeachment evidence. The probative value of the impeachment evidence is the inference, the negative inference that can be drawn, and that's very powerful.
Mm-hmm. It is powerful, and for that reason, it is considered to be an extreme sanction, and it is not available when other remedies are available, such as postponing the trial.
But the problem is he didn't define why it was an extreme remedy. And you would agree, wouldn't you, there was tremendous advantage that you achieved by having these depositions at the end of discovery when the experts or the plaintiffs had no way to evaluate that testimony, when the plaintiff's case had totally been laid out. There was an advantage, wouldn't you agree, that the defense had?
Well,
in the trial, that the plaintiff was not in a position to rebut during the course of their trial?
If Mr. Evans truly believed that he was prejudiced and that more discovery would have changed the outcome of these proceedings, he should have asked for more time. The defendants offered that. He simply never made that request to the district court.
But can't he make a judgment call as to what would be more effective? I mean, it would be pretty powerful to have these defendants on the stand and have it clear that they had taken the fifth all through the proceedings until like 5-10 days before the trial. The jury could certainly evaluate that and weigh that against, because you have a situation where they may have perhaps tailored their testimony to negate some of the things that the experts had said in their report.
Okay, you raise a couple of points, and I would like to try to address them both. First of all, Mr. Evans' position is that he was entitled to the Harris impeachment evidence. He knew he was going to get it. That is just not true. The defendant's position all along was that if circumstances changed and they were able to waive the fifth and testify at trial, they would like to do so freely. If the court has any question that this was an open issue, you can look at the magistrate judge's ruling on June 27th. At that point, there was a dispute about the scope of the depositions, and the magistrate judge expressly held that the Harris question, whether that silence would be admissible, was an open question. And he, in fact, indicated that he would resolve it just as Judge Kaur did and include the silence. These defendants knew that there was a reasonable question that they might not get that evidence in. So for them to say that they knew they were going to get it all along and they went ahead with trial regardless, it's just belied by the record.
Does the record support the conclusion that there was a good faith invocation of the Fifth Amendment privilege all along by these officers?
Yes, Your Honor. The record absolutely supports that the defendants asserted the Fifth in good faith.
Why? What was that special prosecutor looking at?
The special prosecutor was looking at allegations of misconduct at Area 2 and Area 3 Detective Divisions.
Sykes says to the, or her question implied to the street files issue?
No. I mean, the purpose of the special prosecutor's mandate was that the alleged tactics of John Burge had so pervaded the Area 2 and Area 3 Detective Divisions after 1973 that any case investigated in those divisions after that time was subject to scrutiny. That includes the Kabasa case, which was investigated at Area 2 in 1976. But then there's also a couple other points I'd like to make in response to this question. Even Mr. Evans does not dispute that these defendants served under the command of John Burge subsequent to Kabasa, and that the cases they worked on at that time were within the scope of the prosecutor's investigation. And the
But when they were deposed, just a few days before the trial, I thought that generally they said, I don't know why we took the fifth, or I don't know why I took the fifth.
No, that's not true at all. They said, some of them said they relied on the advice of their personal criminal counsel, who are different from their civil counsel here, and they asserted the attorney-client privilege. Many of them said we took the fifth because there was a special prosecutor and we thought we might be targets of that investigation. And many of them also said, and this goes to the point I was getting at before, that they were concerned that if they answered questions about the Kabasa case, they would have waived their right to refuse to answer questions about other cases that even Mr. Evans does not dispute were within the scope of the mandate. That concern was entirely legitimate. If you look at the redepositions, these detectives, McKenna and Hill, tried to selectively assert the fifth in response to questions about other non-Kabasa investigations. Plaintiff's counsel demanded that they answer his questions because they had waived the Fifth Amendment. The final point I'd like to make on Your Honor's question is that the position that Mr. Evans is taking now, that there is no connection between Kabasa and the special prosecutor, is contrary to the position he took in the district court. In the district court, he argued that there was a connection between the two, that the special prosecutor had contacted Mr. Evans about his allegations in this case, and that evidence about John Byrd should be admitted. I want to quickly address Judge Williams's question previously, that perhaps these defendants tailored their testimony. That was completely impossible for them to do so because there's absolutely no they testified according to their police reports and the testimony they gave at the criminal trial. If they said anything different, they would have been subject to impeachment by that prior testimony and reports. There were simply, no big surprises that came out of their testimony. With regard to the experts, specifically Mr. Laverty, he reached his opinion based upon those prior reports and prior testimony. His testimony likely wouldn't have changed. But even so, there is no reason to think that these defendants sat out discovery waiting for Mr. Laverty to die, risking that they would have their testimony barred or be impeached by their prior silence. That's simply not logical behavior. So the propriety of the Fifth Amendment invocations and waivers aside, there was no abuse of discretion in the district court's refusal to enter a default, bar the defendant's testimony, or allow comment on their prior silence, the only remedies Mr. Evans requested. The cases make clear that these sanctions are to be ordered only as a last resort when other remedies are unavailable, and as the district court expressly stated, they were not the way to deal with Mr. Evans's complaints about the privilege assertions here.
Do you think that Judge Carr would have abused his discretion had he permitted the defense to put before the jury the prior invocation of Fifth Amendment privilege by the defense?
Well, as Your Honor well knows, that's not the question presented here.
I know that.
Think it would have been an abuse of discretion because that is an extreme sanction. The admission of prior silence is of extreme prejudicial effect, and there were other remedies available here, specifically postponing the trial, a remedy Mr. Evans never asked for. There is no reason to believe the district court would have denied that remedy, and certainly we can't know either way because Mr. Evans failed to make a record on this issue.
And are there other remedies that you can think of as you stand here today other than the postponement and the impeachment? I know Judge Kaur said he'd be happy to discuss other remedies.
I myself handled the case called Ayanko, where the city obtained attorney's fees as a sanction for having to retake depositions.
Well, but that doesn't go to the heart of the trial, getting attorney's fees.
Yeah, but different.
Mr.
Evans could have gotten his postponement, did all the discovery he now claims he needs,
right, I understand
and been
that.
Compensated
I,
for any waste of time.
I'm asking
the judge asked you a question, okay? We get
paid to ask questions. You get paid to answer.
Of course, I apologize, Your Honor.
My question is, what other remedies are there? You know, the only remedy, the only two things that were discussed was letting that come into testimony and postponing the trial. Can you think of any other remedies?
Well, I mean, other than the one I articulated, I mean, the primary remedy is postponing the trial.
So there are no other remedies you can think of?
Not that I can think of, but I think postponement would have been a completely adequate, more than adequate remedy in this case, and Mr. Evans simply never asked for it. In sum, Mr. Evans limits his appeal to three evidentiary rulings of the district court that not only were not an abuse of discretion, but also that we were made necessary solely as a result of his litigation decisions. For these reasons and the reasons stated in our brief, we respectfully request that the court affirm the district court's grant of judgment for the defendants.
Your Honors, I'd like to start with this paradigm that they put you in, that this is a, quote, extreme sanction. No. Harris says it is a mandatory sanction. It says if you're going to sit out discovery and prejudice the other side, it is reversible error not to permit this impeachment. That's not an extreme sanction. All we're asking Your Honors to do is follow the law. They concede that we were prejudiced. Judge Kaur found prejudice. Of course we were prejudiced. Harris says reversible error not to permit
where there
the impeachment.
Is no discovery.
No, where there's prejudice. Obviously, if we get, you know, in Harris they said maybe depths would have sufficed. It's a simple, straightforward case. Nobody ever said it turns on discovery, because obviously seven depths in the last 9 days.
Well,
you know,
the context of Harris was that the defendants had not been deposed, and here
right.
they had been. So, you know, to the extent that it can be read to impose a mandatory impeachment rule, it's only in that context.
Well, what the rule should, and I believe does read, what the case says is, it's not about whether you got deposed 6 minutes before a trial or not, it's whether you're prejudiced.
Why didn't you ask for an adjournment?
Your Honor, the trial had started. They said that the plaintiff knew he wasn't going to get Harris impeachment. Why did they file an emergency motion? Not even just a motion, an emergency motion.
The jury had been sworn?
The jury had been sworn, Your Honor. No, they filed the emergency motion immediately before the jury is sworn. Judge Kaur didn't take it up till the jury had been sworn, Your Honor. They were in the hall. And this suggestion that Judge Kaur said other remedies? No, Judge Kaur said one thing. Police officer's motion, this is after the jury's been sworn. Police officer's motion to eliminate a bar adverse inference in reference to defendants taking the Fifth Amendment. It's denied. I mean, I'm sorry, the motion to eliminate is granted. Now, we can address this other motion about the bad faith. One word, Your Honor. The jury had been sworn. It is too late. You think Judge Kaur would have entertained a motion for continuance? The trial had started.
Let me ask you this, counsel.
Yes.
Why didn't you file a motion to eliminate? Depositions happen. You know you want to use this. You know you want to use this. I assume that counsel is accurate when she says the magistrate judge alluded to the use of this and indicated that he would not allow it. Why didn't you file a motion before trial started to get the ruling from the court so that jeopardy wouldn't have attached?
We did, Your Honor. We filed a massive motion pointing out their redepositions everything was bogus, and judge didn't take it up until the trial had started. You know, it wasn't his fault.
But what I'm saying is, on this point, in terms of trying to determine whether or not you're going to ask for a continuance or not, but couldn't you have brought to the court's attention, look, Your Honor, given this situation, we need our ruling in advance on whether you're going to allow this to come in, because otherwise we're going to ask for continuance.
We did bring it to the judge's attention, Your Honor.
That crisply.
And as soon as the very second the last redep was taken, keep in mind, they've put us in this situation. Things are flying. You know, it's their strategy of getting in at the last minute. As soon as we were done with the redeps, we filed that exact motion. Judge Kaur didn't take it up till, and it's not Judge Kaur's fault. It's their fault. They created this mess. And, Your Honors, we didn't find out till the trial had started that Harris wasn't going to be followed. And, you know, Judge Kaur said this trial is not moving. That's a realistic constraint. He said both sides plan your strategies, and their strategy was we're going to sit out discovery.
At what point did he say that?
Every point. He maybe said it six times. You know, and he said it when they said the special. They said, you know what, we still don't have an answer on the special prosecutor. They filed one last motion. He said, this trial's not moving. I just did the 2-month Sorich trial. I got speedy trial problems. This is it, guys. And we're entitled to take district courts at their word.
Let me just ask you this question. What was the difference between their testimony at trial and in the report versus what they testified to in the deposition?
A world, Your Honor. At the in the reports, they painted a rosy story about how they did nothing wrong. There was an infinite amount of gaps. We get discovery. We file a lawsuit like this. They spent $2 million, not relying on what happened in 1976. We were totally denied the opportunity to prove that what there was. That's when you file a lawsuit. You get to do discovery. You get to show that what they said in 76 is bogus. We were denied that. They never should have been allowed to testify. But having let them back in the game, the judge was allowed to let them back in. But Harris provides for that. It doesn't say if you get a last-minute deposition. It says if your strategy prejudices the other side. And they cannot get around that Judge Kaur said we were prejudiced. So you got the prejudice. You got he found it was last minute. You got they never had a legitimate invocation in the first place. And you got they only came off because their strategic interests changed. A law that this was fair is not a good rule. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you to both sides. The case will be taken under advisement.